Thank you, everyone. You can tell when it's been half term, can't you? Because I end up up here. I'll see you in 5 weeks' time. So, when I'm not here, I am an English teacher. I've mentioned it once or twice. And I love my job because I really, really love reading. So I got to go to university, the best university at Kiel. I never actually left Stoke, so watch out for that one. I read all the time, read some really great books. And I love reading, I still read a lot now. And I often talk to my classes about the books that I read. In fact, when I'm introducing myself to a new class, I often show them what I've been reading recently and ask them what they can work out about me. So here are some of the books I've been reading recently. Just give you a moment to process those titles. You might be noticing a bit of a theme there. If you want teenagers to think you're a really, really weird person, show them a book called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying. However, my classroom is always tidy now. They know who they're messing with. As you can probably work out, I'm constantly trying to fit more into my days. Whether it's work, home, or family, I've got to get as much as I can. I want to be that productivity ninja. Really great book, by the way. Definitely recommend it. I've learnt the hard way that I do need to sleep sometimes. Learned that last year when Jim was away at conference, so I did a few late nights and early mornings. Then tried to bake Bethany's birthday cake and forgot to put baking powder in it. And Jim came home from his conference to discover a cake in the oven that was quite burnt and bounced on the floor. So I do need to sleep sometimes, but I try to get as much as I can into my everyday because I've got this never-ending to-do list. And Jim's asked me to speak today about expanding your tent. And sometimes that just seems impossible because my tent feels like it's at breaking point and I can't fit any more into my day. And then Jim challenged me to read this book. Pointing it the wrong way, wrong button. The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And genuinely, this is a book that has changed my outlook on life. It's a book about the importance of the Sabbath and building rest and slack into your daily lives so that we're not always busy. It's about the need to make space for God to move in our lives. And it's a book that's really challenged me when I read it and made me reflect on why am I always so busy? What's causing that? Since we read this book, Jim and I make a conscious decision that we don't say we're busy, we say that we have overcommitted. Because we want to recognize that we've made a choice. Tomorrow morning, period one, I've got two meetings simultaneously. I overcommitted tomorrow. But it'll be fine. I'll do it. But we've got to think about why are we always so busy and how can we expand our tents? So I want to focus today on how we can walk with God in the business of our daily lives so we can really strengthen what he's given us and make space for what he wants to do. Now, I think Jim gives me sermon topics because he wants me to read around it and learn a lesson. And I'm most definitely not speaking to you today as someone who's got it sorted. But I hope that what God's been teaching me will speak to you today and that my words will somehow speak into your situation. So I want to base this on Proverbs 31, if you want to turn to that in your Bible. I'll give you a few minutes. Not minutes, seconds, that was too much. Beginning at verse 10. When I told Jim I was going to use this passage today, he said, really? That's controversial, isn't it? So I'm going to be brave. It's a problematic passage in the Bible because it describes the wife of noble character. As a new wife, I used to find this passage really challenging and hard to read because it made me feel somehow inadequate. At other times, I've thought that it's a checklist of all the things I should do every day and then become quite disappointed when I couldn't do it all. But I think it's a really important passage because it gives us an idea about what our daily working lives can look like when we walk with God. So Proverbs chapter 31, beginning at verse 10. A wife of noble character, who can find? She's worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships, bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still night. She provides food for her family and portions for her female servants. She considers a field and buys it, Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds a distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity, and she can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, and her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honour her for all that her hands have done, and let her work bring her praise at the city gate. So as I said, as a young wife, I used to think that was my gold standard of where I should be. So I kind of measure myself against that passage and normally feel quite inadequate. Still do sometimes. But the important point of this passage comes at the end in verse 30, where it says, a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. The point of the proverb isn't how much this person can do, but where their strength to do it comes from. And that word fear is really crucial. It's not the negative fear we talk about, fear of failure, but it's fear of the Lord, which is a much deeper, more affirming idea in the Bible. The Amplified Version, because English teachers love the Amplified Version, translates it like this. A woman who fears the Lord, reverently worshipping, obeying, serving, and trusting him with awe-filled respect, she shall be praised. Reverently worshipping, obeying, serving, and trusting him with awe-filled respect. That's the fear of the Lord. Reverently worshipping means that she knows that it's God who's got the power to help her. She's not arrogant about how much she can get done or her capability, but she draws from God's strength and lives out her life as an act of worship. She's obeying and serving. She follows God's agenda and his priorities for her daily life. Trusting him. Things get hard and she has challenges, but she's trusting God to bring her through. And that leads her to live with this awe-filled respect. When I was at university, I had a lot of deadlines to meet. I did a bit of a Mickey Mouse degree. I did English literature, which meant I had 10 hours of lectures a week, but a lot of reading and a lot of essays. I was also vice president at the Christian Union. I helped out in the Sunday school at my local church, and I was working part-time because Jim and I decided to get married. Who gets married at 21? What were we thinking? So I did all of that at once. And I was busy, doesn't begin to describe it. I was very overcommitted. And there were times when I just didn't see how I could get it all done. And I'd be thinking, can I go to Christian Union tonight? I've got a deadline to meet. But there was a verse that really spoke to me in those years. And I used to keep it stuck on the wall next to my desk to remind me of how I was going to get through my work. And it was this. It was Psalm chapter 3, verses 5 to 6, which says, I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear though tens of thousands assail me on every side. Tens of thousands seemed like a really accurate description of the pile of reading on my desk and the essays I needed to complete. And this verse was a reminder that God was going to help me get through it all. It was also a reminder that I could rest in the knowledge that he would help me to achieve all that he'd called me to do. I didn't need to pull an all-nighter and stay up finishing the work. I needed to follow God's Sabbath rhythms and look after myself, trusting that he was going to help me with it and get it all done. I was so amazed by how God brought me through those years. I look back at it as some of the best time of my life with the answers to testimony for where I would go to Christian Union and have amazing encounters with people. Or I'd stay up late serving tea and toast to people and just meet people who God wanted to pray with. And then I'd still somehow get my essays in on time. God really brought me through that time and I learned to trust in him that he would sustain me even when there's a lot of work to do. And that set me up to go on to get my job and to work as I do. When we bring our daily work and commitments and business to God, he can help us to expand our tent. I think of it like the boy who brought his 5 loaves and 2 fishes to Jesus, trusting that if he gave him the little he had, God would be able to do more than he could ask or imagine with it. We only have 24 hours every day, but when we bring them before God and ask him to use them for his glory, I'm often so amazed by all that I'm able to accomplish for him. The woman in Proverbs 31 trusts God to help her each day, but then she also makes sure that she plays a part. Verse 17 says, she sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. Now, when I was at university, there was a lot of people who really believed that God was going to give them a first in their degree. They talked about it a lot. They told everyone how much faith they had. But I think it would have really helped if they went to their lectures and did their reading. Sadly, that's not exaggeration. Having faith doesn't mean that we become passive and say, well, God's going to do it. It means that we recognize that we play our part in God's bigger picture. We're not overwhelmed by the size of the task we have to do or crippled by a fear of failure, but we take the next step trusting that God is walking beside us and has equipped us for our calling. And with that faith comes a confidence and a commitment to completing the tasks that we've been given to the best of our ability. There's a verse that I memorized years ago at Sunday school. My Sunday school teacher used to teach us, it'll do, won't do, because we're working for God. And that's summarized in Colossians chapter 3, verse 23. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord and not for human masters. Whether we're in our job, in our home, with our family, volunteering, serving the church, whatever it is you're going to be doing tomorrow morning, let's remember why you are doing it. We were made to work for God. Right back in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve were created to care for God's creation. And then throughout the Bible, people are called to work for God, not just as prophets and teachers, but in caring for livestock, organizing the storage of food, building ships and temples, creating artwork and clothing, as fishermen, as shepherds, even making tents. And in the home, we're caring for our children and caring for our parents, as central to God's commandments. We're made to work, and that work comes out of our relationship with God. All work is holy, and every task can be done for God's glory. There's a 17th century monk called Brother Lawrence who wrote a book called The Practice of the Presence of God. And he wrote this: we ought not to be weary of doing little things for the love of God, who regards not the greatness of the work, but the love with which it is performed. Brother Lawrence, in his book, talks about how he learned to serve God in all areas of his life, whether he was serving at the altar in church or washing the dishes in the kitchen. He did it all for God's glory. And sometimes we need to shift our mindset so that we see God in the mundaneness of daily work. That's what the woman in Proverbs does. Verse 27 tells us she watches over the affairs of her household. She does not eat the bread of idleness. And then it says, her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. She lives her life in a way that's an example to her family. And she knows that it's important to work for God, but it's also important to do that, to model it for those around her. When the Israelites entered the promised land, Joshua gave them this challenge: choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. I love that song we sang earlier, I Speak Jesus. There's that line in it, Jesus for my family. And I remember this summer, I get quite emotional. We sang that song a lot at Limitless, Jesus for my family. And every time we prayed it, I just thought of Sophia and I prayed for her. And on the last night, she went forward and she gave her heart to Jesus. And I just think, that's a prayer for my family. We will serve the Lord. We're living in a world where there's lots of influences on our children. Lots of voices telling them what they should and shouldn't do. And we've got to show them God, but we can't just tell them. We have to show them in the way we live our life. I'm so conscious that the girls are watching me. When I've had a bad day and I come home and moan, they pick up on it. And it gives them a view of my job. But I also love it when they have their own aspirations to follow our family values. Years ago, when Bethany was starting to read, she read a book about a princess who couldn't marry the man she loved because he was too poor. And she read this story and she said to me, "I don't understand the problem. The princess has got some money, so she can just pay for things like you do with your job." Yes, I'm raising a feminist. Pray for Jim. There are days that I find work challenging, but I also have a lot of satisfaction in my work. And I want to teach my children to find fulfillment in their work, so that when they grow up, they're able to expand their own tents and serve God. Then we come to verse 25. "She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come." The woman in Proverbs is not afraid of the future. She doesn't know what's going to happen, but she knows that she's prepared. If we're going to expand our tents, we need to plan ahead and allow for unforeseen possibilities. The woman in Proverbs starts early, she works hard, but she's also looking to the future, and she makes investments that prepare for it. She's buying land, she's buying material, she's getting what she's going to need for the future challenges that might come. I remember my mum had an amazing gift of hospitality. She loved to invite people home for Sunday lunch, especially when she saw someone in need. Someone who was new to the church or going through a challenge or lonely. Quite often it was students. And to prepare for this, she used to go to our local Safeway. I'm showing the age of this story now. Local Safeway on a Saturday afternoon. And my mum knew what time they'd go round with the stickers and reduce the prices. Because at this time, my dad was at Bible college and we were on quite a tight budget. But she wanted to be able to feed as many people as possible. So she would go and find a bargain joint of meat that was going to feed as many people as possible. And she'd find this joint, it would be like a mission for her to go and find the best piece of meat. And then she'd call my dad and say, "I found it, I've got this piece of leg of lamb, I've got this bit of beef. You can invite this many people home for lunch tomorrow." She knew that in order to meet the needs of as many people as possible, she had to be prepared. She had to work hard and find the resources to do that. We prepare not just to strengthen our own tents, to shut the door and protect our own families, but so that we're prepared for those who we're going to meet every day. I've spoken before about God's priorities in the Bible for the orphans and the widows, for those who are rejected and isolated, those who are forgotten and alone. The woman in Proverbs sees these people. Verse 20 tells us she opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. Because her hard work has made her prepared, she has space in her tent to welcome those who need it. A few years ago at Burslem, Jim's vision for the church was to be a family where there's always room for one more. A family where there's always room for one more. If we are stretched to breaking point and consumed by the business of our lives, we can become like the Levite in the parable, who left the injured man at the side of the road because he was worried about getting to his work in the temple. I'd rather be like the Samaritan who makes a sacrifice of time and money to help the injured man. Proverbs 31 isn't teaching us to fill every waking moment with work. It's a reminder that we need to find balance so that we are prepared to help those in need when we come across them. Work and family life is a great gift from God, but also sometimes it's difficult to balance. And in our modern world, it can feel like a treadmill where the pace just gets faster and faster. Our reward for getting things done is more work, and our tents feel really full. So I want to finish with a children's story that the girls used to read about a woman who complained that her house was too small. You might be familiar with this. So a wise old man told her to take her cow inside a house, and that just made it feel more crowded. So he told her to take a sheep in, and then a pig in, and then all the other animals. So soon this tiny house is full of livestock. And with a house full of animals, the woman goes back to the wise old man, wondering if he is indeed a wise old man. and says, what on earth were you thinking? The house seemed too small before, but now it's absolutely packed. It's tiny, it's titchy, I can't cope. So we told her to take all the animals out. And without all the animals inside her house, suddenly her house seemed a lot bigger. It's like my house when I take down the Christmas decorations. It hadn't changed at all. It was still her small house. But her perspective had changed, and she was able to appreciate what she had rather than longing for more. We all have our challenges that we're facing tomorrow. Work, home, families, with our friends and our neighbourhoods. There's work that seems too hard. There's days we just feel too tired. And God wants to be a part of our work. God has called you to exactly where you are. He's called you for such a time as this. And he wants to be with you tomorrow. So I want to take some time to reflect on what we're going to do tomorrow. So let's just still our hearts and think about what's on your agenda, your schedule for tomorrow morning. And as we bring all those things before God, let's remind ourselves we can trust in God's strength to get those things done. And God, we ask you that in everything we do tomorrow, that you help us to remember who we're working for and why we're doing it. So everything we do for your glory. God, help us to find that space to help people who need it. Help us to trust in you when we feel overwhelmed. And help us to expand our tents so that we're able to serve you more in all we do. Amen.
Thank you, Naomi. I think probably